Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at robertsrobinson.com.
It's not very often you see greatness in sports and don't think much of it. And you're not really impressed. You're not slayed by what you're seeing. It happened at the Open Championship, the 150th Open Championship this weekend, as Cameron Smith became the champion golfer of the year with a remarkable performance on the final nine holes of the event, birdieing six of those nine holes, coming from as much as four back to take the lead and beat ultimately Rory McIlroy and Cameron Young to become champion golfer of the year. It was a spectacular, I mean, spectacular putting performance. And I guess one of the things we learned through all this is putting isn't really that sexy. This is a wonderful golf event. Huge crowds, over 300,000 people at St. Andrews this weekend for the Open Championship. And not to take a single thing away from Cameron Smith, who's one of the great young players in the world. He won the Players' Championship earlier this year. He is, I think it's easy to say, the best putter on the planet. The man made 244 feet of putts on Sunday in his round. If you divide that by 18 holes, that's almost 14. His average made putt was almost 14 feet long. That is outrageous. It is insane. Rory McIlroy played terrific golf, hit every fairway, every green, two-putted all day long, made a couple of birdies, but when he's able to drive a green or get on and have an eagle putt, he would two-putt for birdie. But he couldn't make anything. He couldn't one-putt any hole all day long. And so ultimately this was a putting contest, and Cameron Smith wins it. What was so remarkable about it was there was no swashbuckling. It was certainly not Tiger Woods-esque. We've watched some great performances in golf through the years. Terrific golfers who smash the ball a million miles, knock it into deep stuff, whack it out of the junk or near a creek or in the woods and save par and then go on a birdie binge. That isn't what Cameron Smith did at all. Earlier in the day, you weren't really even watching him. He was so far back. He rattled off five birdies in a row, beginning at the 10th hole, to start the back nine. It was one of the greatest putting performances I've ever seen. And I guess maybe it's just him personally. Maybe that's the kind of player he is. It just wasn't that interesting. This whole event was kind of a dud. And it's just not very often in sports that something is a dud when you're seeing something spectacular. And there was no other way to describe his play other than spectacular, but it was uninteresting. If you're not a complete golf nerd, if you're not completely, wigged out on loving watching the majors and things of that nature, you didn't care at all. In fact, my buddy Andy came over and we were watching together and Jessica was really into it. I think they found it more entertaining than I did, but it really wasn't very entertaining at all watching him win this thing. Reminded me a little bit of, although these are far different, these were less interesting, great performers and champions, but we recognized them for what they were, and I think maybe we were just burned out on them. Watching Tom Brady all those years with the Patriots was a little bit like that. You'd watch him win the Super Bowl, and you'd be bored by it. You're like, it's kind of boring. It's Tom Brady again. Derek Jeter and the Yankees back in the day, you'd watch, and you'd understand they were great, and they'd win, but you were just kind of bored with it. And you'd watch Jeter play, and you knew you were watching greatness. It just was kind of boring because it was just over and over and over the same thing. That isn't Cameron Smith. He's not Tiger Woods. He's not even Phil Mickelson at this point. He hasn't won a bunch of majors. This was his first. He's very young. He may win a pile of them. And again, I don't know when I've ever seen a golfer ever, at any level ever, putt the way this guy putts. And I don't know if you can sustain that. I don't know if you... Jordan Spieth a few years ago was on a putting tear and won some majors and looked like he was going to be a generational figure and just beat people forever. But then he stopped making putts. He's still a very good putter, but they didn't all fall. Jordan Spieth would have a 22-footer, and if I were playing against him, I'd just give it to him, which is crazy. You can't do that. Even these great putters at the highest level in the Open Championship, this was an otherworldly level. The way Cameron Smith was rolling in putts. I mean, ridiculous what he did. And as I'm watching it, I'm not that entertained by it. It wasn't that interesting. Again, there was nothing sexy about this golf tournament. There were too many players in the middle of the fairway, too many players on the green. There was not enough trouble on the golf course. It was ultimately too easy, 20 under par. This was, we got to call it like this. This was a bad Open Championship. It was not nearly as interesting as it should have been. Now, that being said, I was rooting for Rory McIlroy. The crowd was behind him. Rory's a great champion. He's probably becoming known better for finishing second a lot. In this case, it was third. He could have finished second, but he took a chance on the last hole to try to hole out and win the thing, or tie to get into a playoff. But he finished second at the Masters earlier this year. Rory's a great player. He's the number two player in the world. He's exceedingly popular. The fans love him. They were behind him in this event. And would it have been wild? He had the lead all day. He didn't do anything to lose the lead. He didn't make bogeys. He didn't play poorly. Cameron Smith just freaked out and made every putt. And it still wasn't that interesting. And that's one of the problems with golf. That's one of the problems the sport inherently has, is if there is not a big, bold personality or champion at the front of the pack, it can be uninteresting to a lot of people. And this one was. It just was not a very good Open Championship. It was not. And it was one of the greatest performances I've ever seen. And I was largely unimpressed. Cameron Smith said after receiving the claret jug and winning the Open Championship, they asked him how he was going to celebrate. He said, well, you get to keep the jug for a year. It's a famed trophy, and it is kind of a jug. He said, I'm going to find out how many beers fit into this thing tonight. Good enough. Congratulations, Cameron Smith. I'm not taking anything away from this guy. What an unbelievable young golfer. There is no way he can putt like this the rest of his life. He's having a year. He's having a time. He's a really good player. It's not that he can't, make shots. He's not a good ball striker, all those things. It's not that he's that. It's just right now, nobody on earth can putt a golf ball like this guy and get it in the hole. And it just isn't that sexy. It reminds me of just some other things that have happened in sports that you're watching greatness. It's just not that impressive, which is kind of hard to say. In fact, the most interesting part of my day yesterday was likely when the golf tournament was over. Andy came in and was looking at the podcast studio here and says, where's the frog? Where do the frogs live? And then the window was right here. There's the window well. I said, look at this slimy stuff on the outside of the window, because the sun was kind of coming in a little bit. I said, you see the slime on the outside of the window? It's dried slime. It smudges is the better way to describe it. That's from the frog repeatedly jumping at his shadow or something on the glass and making smudges. And I said, the frogs were gone, and the frog came back this weekend. The smaller one, not the big one, the smaller one was back. Maybe he was never out of there. I don't know. I lifted the big one out. The little one went away. Maybe not. So I dug under the leaves. I found him, and we rescued him again, and he's out. Now, if the frogs return to the window well again, I will let you know. But they're definitely free and gone, and he was very interested in that. And I think rescuing the frog yesterday out of the window well and releasing him into the woods by the creek, I think that was more interesting than the British Open. I have to say it. And I thank Andy for helping me with that little frog. The frogs are definitely gone now. I thought they were both gone. I knew that I got the big one out and let him go. I thought the little one was gone, but he wasn't. He started jumping again this weekend, and we got him out of there, and he's released. I am amazed how many people have emailed, and people have walked up to me and asked about the frogs. So I know you're fascinated by the frogs. I promise you right now, as I do this podcast, there are no frogs in the window well. None today. If they come back, I will report back. But that little fella, I actually kind of threw him kind of hard and felt bad. Jessica was not happy with me. I took the shovel and I got him because I didn't have a net. And he was a hopper. This little guy, the big fellow, when I got him out, was pretty easy. He wasn't interested in hopping, and I just set him down on the ground, and he was gone. This little guy's a hopper. And as I was trying to pick him up with the shovel, all he was doing was jumping. So once I got him on the shovel, I had to lift it pretty quickly and get him out. And when I did, the velocity was a little too much, and I might have thrown him about 10 feet. I don't think that hurts a frog at all. I mean, they kind of make their living like jumping and flying and falling, right? When he landed in the grass, he didn't do anything. We walked up to him, and I was trying to push him to the woods or get him to the woods. And at this point, I think he was like in shock. He couldn't believe what had happened in his world. But I released him in the shade into the woods where there was a little bit of water and down toward the creek, and I think the little froggy's going to be just fine. The frog was more interesting than the British Open. And that, you know, that's no headline. That's just life. The frog definitely more interesting than the Kansas City Royals, who finished the, well, we call it the first half of the year because the All-Star break is here now, 36-56 after, you know, the Royals played a pretty good series in Toronto and lost 3 out of 4. This is kind of what they are. Even with their young guys up, they've optioned them all back to the minors, and the regular roster will be back later this week after the All-Star break. The Royals are 36-56, and what's so disappointing about this is there's no good team in the division. I mean, there's like a window right here. The Twins have first place in the division at 50-44. As you know, that's not great. Cleveland's 2 games over .500 and only 2 games back, or 3 games, whatever, they're 2 games back in the standings of the Minnesota Twins. And they're not particularly good. You can't rattle up a bunch of superstar players. The division isn't great. People thought the White Sox would be the team. They have pitching and all this other stuff, and they're not. The Royals are literally just squandering away a few years here in a window where the division doesn't have a great team. If the Royals were just, my goodness, 5 or 6 games under .500, they'd be like 5 games, 6 games out of first place. And you could go, okay, you know, if this guy comes along, if this happens, if that happens, beat the Twins head-to-head a few times, it would be interesting. And we could talk about it. And it would be fun. And it's not. They're just a lifeless team that's 36-56, 13 games out at the break, with no chance of going anywhere, and 10 players that just sat out because they didn't take the jab. It's never a good look when the most interesting thing about your season is players not taking the shot and not being able to play in Toronto. And that has been the headline of the Royals season by far. The draft began on Sunday. The Royals picked a couple of players. Gavin Cross, an outfielder out of Virginia Tech. They took him 9th overall. They love his bat, and they've gone position players here at the top of the draft. In the 2nd round, remember the Royals had the 35th pick, the supplemental pick. They traded away to the Braves for a couple of really good prospects. So they didn't have the 35th selection. Their 2nd pick was, I think, 49th overall or something in the 40s. And they selected a 3rd baseman, Caden Wallace, out of Arkansas, which is where Dayton Moore's son was playing. So they saw Caden Wallace a lot. And so the Royals have picked up Gavin Cross and Caden Wallace. Those are your headlines with what the Royals have done at the top of the draft. And we are reduced as Royals fans to simply rooting for prospects. And I had that discussion with AC yesterday. My buddy, he's like, the Royals game was on Peacock. We couldn't get it on. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't have the game on. He loves the Royals more than anybody I know. And he starts talking about the young guys that came up, and he's excited. I said, you follow all the minor league guys? He said, Kevin, except for 2 years, he's much younger than I am. He's like 30-something. And he said, Kevin, except for 2 years, that's all I've had my whole life is following minor league players, hoping that the Royals would be good someday. I learned it at a young age. That's what I do. Of course I follow the minor league players, because you're always hoping the next thing is better than the thing you're watching. And I thought that was just the saddest commentary ever on the Royals. Very real, very true, but I'd never really looked at it that way. I don't follow minor league statistics of players. I won't pay a whole lot of attention to Gavin Cross and Caden Wallace as they start out their journeys in the minor leagues for the Royals. I'll pay attention maybe next year in spring training, look back, what they do in A-ball last year and whatnot, but I have a hard time doing that. Show me what you got at the big league level, and I'll judge that. And right now what the Royals have is not very good at all. And they're not really involved in anything. KKHI is brought to you by Window World, simply the best for less, online at windowskansascity.com. They're the official windows of the Kansas City Chiefs. They'll do a free analysis for you, an estimate, 0% financing available, American-made, windows, siding, and doors with lifetime warranties. 816-799-0820 for Window World, simply the best for less. 360 Document Solutions. Met with my good friend Mark Lindquist on Friday. It was his birthday. We had a few laughs, shared a few stories. It was a good time, and he is a good dude, and he can help your business. Give him a call. If you would like to find out how to save money and make more money and become more profitable at your business, 360 Document Solutions can help you. 360documentsolutions.com. Call Mark at 913-745-5344. CrossKitchensKC.com. 816-898-7047. Tim and his family have a wonderful business that will work firsthand with you on the project of your dreams in your most important investment, your home. Remodeling your kitchen, maybe a bathroom. He can do man caves. He does a lot of different things. They specialize, obviously, in kitchens. That's why Tim Cross calls his business Cross Kitchens. Online at crosskitchenskc.com. He'd love to sit down with you, free of charge, and talk about your dreams and see if you can make it a reality with crosskitchenskc.com. Fox Sports is in a little trouble. This weekend, they put a promo on promoting the Red Sox-Yankees game. And they took the logos of the Red Sox and the Yankees, and they superimposed them over the 9/11 memorial site in New York, where the Twin Towers once stood. They have apologized profusely and said they used very poor judgment, and they regret their decision. This isn't the end of the world. I can understand how something like this could happen. Maybe it's a fireable offense. Maybe some producer somewhere at Fox Sports gets fired for doing this because it was tacky, whatever. In the creative process, anytime you're in television, media, podcasting, radio, whatever, you're always trying to do something that's interesting, catchy, creative. You try. This was not meant to be offensive. It was, as they said, poor judgment. They regret their decision, whatever. Again, it's not the end of the world. I think we get caught up a lot of times in trying to find controversy in places that it doesn't exist. But this became a social media nightmare for Fox Sports. New Yorkers went crazy that they had superimposed logos to promote a baseball game over the 9/11 memorial site where the Twin Towers once stood. Again, what are we as a society? What have we become with social media? And do we really have to fall all over ourselves apologizing for simple human mistakes? There was nothing nefarious here. Nobody was trying to be offensive. You know, I think the standard really on a lot of these things should be, did somebody try to do something to upset us? Were they trying to offend? And if they weren't, just drop it. Just let it go. This happened. It's not the end of the world for Fox Sports. They've apologized, said it was poor judgment. I really honestly hope somebody doesn't lose their job over it. It's not something like that at all. It was a simple little promo for a Red Sox-Yankee game they were going to have that was going to be in New York, and they show the site of where the 9/11 memorial is. And yes, it was a silly thing and probably a giant overreaction, but Fox Sports has nipped this in the bud very quickly, saying they used poor judgment and they regret their decision. It's a silly looking logo and promo. It doesn't actually, because the way they used it, the way it looked, you couldn't really tell it was that site. I don't think. But obviously New Yorkers and people picked it up right away and went crazy. So there's that sort of mini controversy out there. I got an email from the folks at Hollywood Casino and NASCAR, the Speedway, Kansas Speedway. I'm on their email list. As a qualified media member covering NASCAR, I get all the emails. And so the Speedway sends it over and says there's going to be a news conference Wednesday at Hollywood Casino concerning sports gaming in Kansas. After just a tiny little bit of asking around and figuring out what's going on, they're going to announce, it is likely on Wednesday, that the sports book at Hollywood Casino will be called Barstool Sportsbook. Barstool is a very popular sports website. Dave Portnoy is the founder of Barstool. You may know of him. He is conservative, but not ultra-conservative. He was like really mad at the Supreme Court over the abortion thing. So he stands on the other side on that. But I think he considers himself sort of loosely friends with Trump. He's an in-your-face Northeastern kind of guy who basically says a lot of things that are very conservative. He's kind of in-your-face. Barstool Sports is kind of in-your-face. And he's wildly successful and popular. I have nothing negative to say about the guy. I think he overreacted on the abortion thing, but I think a lot of people overreact on things like that. But it appears that the sports book at Hollywood Casino, and I think they're building it as we speak, where the buffet area used to be and whatnot, is going to be spectacular. Barstool Sports is a fun, young, hip brand. This will be a fun place for sports fans to go and watch games. And you'll be able to get the app on your phone, the Barstool Sports app. You'll be able to go into the casino, go to the sports book, bet on any game you want. It's going to be Vegas style. And if it's Barstool, it's going to be hip and fun. And I'm looking forward to it. We expect the formal announcement on Wednesday. It is believed this sports book will be up and running by the Chiefs' first game. There's also NASCAR at the Speedway in September, and that will be a big deal. There's people going to be wanting to go in there and bet on the NASCAR race because this race is right out the window. You go up to Turn 2 Lounge and you look out the window, or you stand on the deck and you're overlooking the Speedway. It is a very natural thing to have a sports book there. It sounds like it's going to be really cool, really hip, and really fun for a lot of people. So thought we would let you know about that. I think we're going to have sports gaming in Kansas up and running by football season pretty darn easily. And I will let you know somewhere down the road which app I have and how I'm doing it, because I will be a customer with one of these casinos for sure and one of these apps. I'll try to sort through and figure out which is the best one and do some homework for you if that's okay. But Andy was here over the weekend. He said, I can't wait. I just want to go sit some Sunday in that sports book. He said, because we all love it. We all love going to the sports book and watching football. It's fun. It's really fun. He said, I can't wait to do it. And then the next day, I don't wake up in Vegas. I'm like, what? He goes, oh, it'll be great. We're at home. We can go do that all day, sleep in my own bed. And the next day, it's just normal. He said, it's fun to do that in the sports book in Vegas, but then the next day you wake up and you're in Vegas and you're like, oh, yes, exactly right. This will be fun. Barstool Sports, it looks like, is coming to Hollywood Casino. Okay, in news, the summer of violence continues. We've got two stories this weekend of, well, one was robbery, the other was mass shooter. We'll start with the Indianapolis shooting. A dude is in the food court at a mall in Indianapolis. He's got a long gun, and he's going to shoot people. And he winds up killing three, a citizen who is legally armed with a handgun, shoots and kills the dude, and saves how many lives? How many lives were saved by the person who legally had a handgun at the mall and killed the shooter long before any cops could respond? How many lives were saved? I mean, I don't know, 15, 10, take your pick. How many would this guy have killed? He's in a food court at a mall, and he was able to kill three before the do-gooder, the good guy with a gun, shot the shooter and killed him dead. This looks like an open and closed, cut and dried case. In St. Louis, it's a little bit different. In St. Louis over the weekend, a dude goes into Quick Trip and goes to the bathroom. I think he'd bought gas or something and got a snack or whatever, goes to the bathroom. Comes out of the bathroom, walks out of Quick Trip. As he's walking out, a man is walking in with a backpack. It looked a little strange. So the dude that walks out sees the guy, and he turns back around and he kind of looks through the window and sees that this is not good. Okay, that guy's in there to rob the Quick Trip. So the man on the sidewalk sees this, and what does he do? He goes to his car, where in his glove box locked up is his handgun. He goes and gets his 9mm. He walks back into Quick Trip, and apparently the man robbing Quick Trip at this point has a lady, a clerk, an attendant at knife point and says, give me all the money. Open the drawer, give me everything you got, whatever. And this man with the 9mm says, checkmate, let her go, get the hell out of here, or I'm going to shoot you. And apparently he grabs or lunges or whatever. And while he does, and then the guy with the 9mm just shoots and kills the would-be robber. Again, good guy with a gun stops a crime in progress. This is really harsh to say. I don't like violence. I don't wish harm on any human being. I want anybody doing these crimes to be killed. The guy in New York that goes into the bodega and the 61-year-old man who grabbed the box cutter and carved him up and dropped him and killed him? Justice served. Quick Trip, St. Louis, dead robber. Justice served. Mall shooter, Indiana. Justice served. I'm for it, man. We need more and more and more stories like this. If people are going to be crazy and people are going to commit crimes, good guys with guns or weapons will step up and do what needs to be done. The best deterrent to stop Quick Trip robberies or bodega robberies or mall shootings is good guys with guns. And I'm in no way, shape, or form disparaging police officers. I'm simply saying they can't be everywhere at all times. Good guys with guns can stop more crime in this country than anything else. Criminals by nature are stupid. They've gone down a bad path in their life. They're dumb. They're not making it in the world. And then they do stupid things to try to make money or whatever it is that they're doing. So by nature, you're not dealing with the best among us. But even dumb criminals are smart enough to know, wow, you know, there's a lot of people out there packing heat. And if I go try to do this, somebody could just pop me. Like, I'm guessing if you wanted to rob the Quick Trip with a knife, you really didn't want to hurt anybody. You didn't really want to kill anyone. You darn sure weren't interested in dying. But the crime is worthy of that. You're holding a lady at knife point and some citizen with a gun pops you and kills you. You got what you deserved. Now, that case is far from over in St. Louis. They're going to look at that one long and hard. And I don't know all of the details. I've only read news accounts of what took place. But by and large, we hear that and go, okay, good guys won. I'm sorry. If you walk into a Quick Trip with a knife and you grab the lady that works there and you try to steal money, you kind of deserve to get shot. You just do. And I don't feel sorry for any of these people that are involved in that. And I think we win. I know several people in my life that carry guns, and I'm glad they do. I'm thrilled that they do. They can only do good. They're never going to hurt anybody. They can only do good. And they're definitely protecting themselves and their families, but they're also the kind of people that would do what these two people did in Indianapolis and St. Louis over the weekend. There's no doubt in my mind, zero, that that's part of the reason that they carry, that they would do that in a situation like this, that they would step up and be the hero and risk their own lives to save others. And we'll take all that we can get. Take all of it we can get. Another good thing to carry might be a Finch pocket knife. Never know when that may come in handy. Finch Knife Company is a wonderful Kansas City business. And if you have a business you'd like to stock their knives, they'd love to put them in your retail store or online. If you'd like to buy one of these beautiful pocket knives, keep life from getting dull with Finch Knife Company online at finchknifeco.com. Their updated series out right now is the 1929 series, which is an homage to the Grand Tetons. Every Finch knife has a great American theme to it. Really cool stuff. They're collectible pieces of art or carry them every day. The handles are made of mother of pearl, wood, bone, you name it. Beautiful pocket knives. Keep life from getting dull online at finchknifeco.com. My buddy Ron Buck over at Buck Roofing and Construction, a free estimate, free inspection, 913-384-2680. You will sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. And Dr. Jeremy and his team at Fry Orthodontics with 12 locations in the Kansas City area for your convenience. First appointment's always free, and they do video appointments as well, which saves you time. Saves you time picking your kid up at school, taking them in. A lot of these things can be done through video appointments now and save you all kinds of time. Fry Orthodontics is all about making the experience great for you and your family, whether it's for your teenager or whether you're 77 years old and you just want that perfect smile. Fry Orthodontics, online at fryorthodontics.com. Interesting, this weekend, Tucker Carlson of Fox News went to Iowa on Friday night and gave a speech. I think this is one of the very earliest speeches in Iowa. As you know, Iowa, New Hampshire are the two states where politicians generally go and start speaking and have a presence if they're going to run for president. So it's pretty weird. There's people out there like Bill O'Reilly has said Tucker Carlson is never running for president. There's all kinds of people say Tucker Carlson, no chance he's running for president. But there are others that are like, look at everything he's doing. Now, I've been in the media long enough to know that there is no downside for Tucker Carlson professionally for him to go to Iowa and make it look like he's running for president. It's free publicity for him, free publicity for his show. It could get ratings. It can make him money. There's a lot of things here. He also may be thinking, I'd be a really good president. And he would. And you know, we got a lot of folks on our side that will just drive the left crazy. We do. A lot of really strong conservatives now. Tucker Carlson's among them. He's the smartest guy in the room. I've said it many times on this podcast. The first 15 minutes of his show are must watch every day. And I know Fox News does 24 hours of news a day. They have 15 minutes of programming every day that is 25,000 times better than any other moment of the day on Fox News. And it's his monologue. It is always thought-provoking, smart, spot-on. Sometimes his delivery is a little goofy. He laughs kind of funny. His voice gets a little high-pitched. It's just him. I don't care. The content is so good. This man knows so much, and he is so smart. Would he be a great campaigner? I don't know. Would he be a great debater on stage? Oh, yeah. It would be remarkable to see that. He'd be phenomenal at that. And I think he's one of those guys that, if he got there, would be a remarkable president. Because he wouldn't give two blanks about anyone and what they think. He would simply do the right thing. He would do the job. And you know how effective he is because the only thing they have on him, like the only thing they have on him, he's Christian, he's a family man, he's all these other things. The only thing they have on him is the race card. They try to say he's a white supremacist, he's a racist. And his comments are clearly racist in the things that he says. Which is, of course, absurd. But you know they don't have anything on you when that's the only card they play. There isn't 20 years of political history where they can say, oh, he voted for this bill, or he changed his mind on this stance, or whatever. They don't have any of that stuff on him. So he's interesting. I don't think he's going to run for president, but I think it would be really interesting if he did. And the fact that he went to Iowa and gave a speech, we knew it was coming. It was announced a couple months ago that he was going to be the keynote speaker on this event Friday night in Des Moines, is pretty interesting. He said in his speech that he believes the Wednesday after the midterm, so that's like November, I don't know what the election date is, the day after the Tuesday, the Wednesday after the Tuesday midterm election in November, there will be, quote, a mad scramble, unquote, for the Democrat nomination for president. He said, you won't believe what's going to happen beginning that Wednesday. The day after the midterms will begin a mad scramble for 2024 on the Democrat side for who's going to be the nominee, because it will not be Joe Biden. Joe Biden will, I think at some point, maybe in January, announce that he is not running for reelection and open it up. Kamala Harris certainly will run. You know the usual suspects. Bernie Sanders will run. Pete Buttigieg will run. A lot of people think AOC will run. She turns 35 the month before the election in 24. And it'd be a dream come true if she were the candidate to run against. She's not going to beat anybody. So it will get interesting. And I think it will get interesting beginning, as Tucker Carlson said, a mad scramble the day after the midterm elections. I think it's probably the best way to describe that. There will be a mad scramble to see who the Democrat is. I spent a lot of time this weekend talking with friends, and we all agree on one thing. We have no idea what's going to happen with Trump and DeSantis on the other side, but we should get some very interesting clues in the not-so-distant future. We should probably get some pretty good clues in December and January as to what's going to happen. Are they going to broker a deal? Are they going to figure it out between them? I don't know. You're going to get your... Some people run for president just for the publicity of it because it's good for them, like this Kristi Noem, the governor in South Dakota, Nikki Haley. I mean, there'll be some other There will be others that run. Pompeo will probably run. So a whole bunch of people out there can get 1%. You know, the friends and family vote. And they just do it. It betters their careers. It's good for book sales, whatever. They do that. There is nobody on the right. It's really simple. Unless a celebrity jumps in, and I've said this before, whether that's Tucker Carlson or Joe Rogan or Dana White, the owner of UFC, if one of those people jumps in, it gets really interesting. Otherwise, it's Trump and DeSantis and what they figure out between them, because I don't think they're rivals. I don't think they dislike each other in any way. I think they're going to figure this out between them, what they're going to do. And the more and more I talk to people, the more and more I hear from people say they would love for Trump to just be the kingmaker and DeSantis go ahead and take the thing over. I hear a lot of people say that. I say, well, that sounds good or looks good on like a playbook on a piece of paper, but it doesn't sound very Donald Trump, does it? I mean, if he's healthy, there's no reason to believe he isn't, I guess, at this point. If he's healthy, what is it about Donald Trump's ego that leads you to believe that he is not going to run and try to win back the presidency and do the nanny nanny ha ha? He wants that in the worst way, I think. Don't you? Should be interesting. All right, we're off and running on another week of KKHI. Thank you so much, as always, for hitting the play button and being here and listening. I just have more and more people walking up all the time saying they listen to this thing. It's just crazy. Thank you so much for all your support and for caring enough to hit play and to listen. Should be a big, fun week here. We got a lot of good stuff coming up. And we always appreciate you being with us. And hit that like or follow or subscribe button if you would. If you haven't done that yet, please hit that or find somebody. Tell them about the podcast and show them how to listen on their phone or whatever it may be. And have them hit the like, follow, or subscribe button. We really appreciate your support in that way. And as always, we thank you for supporting our sponsors. So many of you share emails with me that you go to our sponsors for this or for that. And I can't thank you enough for that. That's what makes the whole thing work. And we really appreciate you being on board. Have a great, great week, folks. And thanks, as always, for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.